Hello, everyone. So, I have to do this special episode off the top of my head, totally. Because it's about educating and enlightening people about what happens when a child is unprotected. So, I'll share a little bit about my sexual past, things I never said. Then that'll be all the details of my sexual past being officially out. Then I'll tell you life after my sexual past. Okay, that'll work. So there were times where when I was with women, they had it in them to want to protect me as they understood what they meant to protect me, even though it's debatable what protection of me means in this scenario. I understand that. Because psychologists, psychiatrists, therapists, counselors, coaches, consultants, and experts can weigh in on this. That's why it's debatable. I remember that they did not want anyone to say anything bad about me. If they felt that someone was, they were quick to go toe-to-toe verbally, even physically. It barely happened. Every now and then you meet a guy that gets jealous of the fact that there were women flocking to me and not them. These were male misogynists. And I had a reputation for gentlemanliness and chivalry. And so these male misogynists would see us and start, calling me names. And before I could say anything, the women would step in. Sometimes giving me a look as if to say, don't say anything, I got this. And I would not speak because in my mind, she want to handle this. And this is something she's purposely doing. Who am I to stop her? She's that determined. So I said nothing. And the women would read these male misogynists, the Riot Act. And usually the male misogynists would end up leaving after a while because these women were just relentless. They were relentless if they felt like you were being unrelenting yourself. Like if you kept trying to say bad things about me that are clearly untrue, the women would keep going. They would stop until you stopped. But sometimes male misogynists would get more indignant and say more bad things that are untrue. And on some rare occasions, these women actually beat up men badly to the point of bloodshed. So they were the type where if they truly had feelings for you, they would go to blows for you and throw blows on your behalf verbally and with those hands, as they say nowadays. It very rarely happened, but I remember at least four occasions where that occurred. It was four men individually each time. And what they would say about me is, when male misogynists have no logic and they have no facts, no truth, no evidence, No research, no knowledge. They'll start making transphobic, homophobic statements, and they'll start making statements about how awful my sexual performance must be, and Antonio can't really attract women like that anyway, and you know, any woman that gets with him must be delusional, all that type of stuff. But they'll say all these stuff profanely. They would say the same thing in many different ways, many different profane ways. That's it. And the women would just go off the top of their head and start insulting everything about the men. Nothing was off limits. In terms of, I'm gonna talk about what I know about you, what's been the rumors being said about you. They would just go off profanely. That happened 4 times. I remember with the children, I remember with their kids, I would talk to them. I would try not to talk to them about their father. And they would look at me and say, "You're better at being my father than my father is." And I'm feeling stuck, so I would go to the mothers, the ones I was involved with, and say, "This is what, you know, the children just said. I don't know what to do." And so I would come out with the mothers, because I went to their rooms, and they were in their room, the mothers in their rooms, just chilling, laying down. And the mothers and I came out, and the mothers, to my surprise, said, "I want you to talk to them about their father." And so we had that talk on the spot, the mothers, me, and the kids. And the mothers looked at me as if to say, "It's time for you to say something." But she said it with her face. She was nonverbal at that point. And I said, "Well, I'm going to do my best to live up to how fathers should be." And the children said, "You're already doing that, and then some. You're the perfect father." And so the mothers are smiling and looking at me as if to say, "You're doing," as if to say, not verbally, with their faces, "You're doing well. Keep the conversation going. Keep being honest." And I would just hug the kids. I didn't have anything to say at that point. And she looked at me as if to say, "That was the perfect response." And she said it verbally too. "That was the perfect response." And I cried, the kids cried, but it was tears of joy on my part. And mothers and I, you know, we hugged each other. We all hugged each other, tears of joy. And I remember at that time that I remember at that time being with the mothers, and when I was with the mothers, we would talk about our lives and what we've been through as kids. And this is new. Because I said that part before, but let me give you new details. We spent sometimes just really holding each other, being each other's snuggle buddies, and cuddling each other. And sometimes we would just sit in silence. We basically did the ancient Jewish tradition. I didn't know it was the ancient Jewish tradition at the time, but this is what we were doing. I remember we didn't speak until the mourner spoke. We didn't talk all that much. We would just look at each other, hold each other, and we let each other know what kind of physical contact we appropriately needed in that moment. And we didn't do quotations, we didn't do cliches, and we did not do any toxic positivity. We just cried. We just held each other, rubbed each other, caressed each other, and whispered the most kindest things a human being could say to another human being. And we wiped each other's tears. We blew each other's noses and snots and boogers with handkerchiefs and tissues. Sometimes we just used our hands. We didn't care in the moment. And I remember they would sit on my lap. They'll have me sit on their lap. I was like, we would just lay on each other. We were each other's beds, basically. I remember we wouldn't have any technology. Being used, all of our technology was off. Turned off, and I remember that we wouldn't really ask questions. We were sad because we knew our questions were so profoundly deep that we knew that no human being could answer our questions. So I remember, you know, time periods where we would just listen to each other and vent. And if we wanted solutions, we let each other know, okay, it's time for the solutions. Other times, we felt like just listening to each other was enough. And it wasn't purposeful trauma dumping. It wasn't purposeful spiritual bleeding. It was a sense of we were lamenting with one another as best we could, and not fully understand that's what we were doing at that moment. So I remember with the mothers of the children, these are new details I'm going to tell you. There were some women who wanted to, as they said, be my baby mamas. And they wanted to start out of wedlock families with me. They would start families with me. And these were women who, if I find me a good man, I'ma have his babies as if tomorrow isn't promised. Like there's no tomorrow, those are the exact words. And I told the women originally that I'm not financially at the point where I could be a father. Once I graduate and I can have gainful, productive employment, then we can start having kids. And it's not right now. And the women agreed, but they were more like, hey, if I get pregnant by you, they said to me that I'ma have the baby. And I said that before, let me say something I've never said. New details to keep you up to speed. They even said, look, you're right, but at the same time, I want you to be my children's father. I want to be your kids' mothers. They said, you know, I hear you. And at the same time, they talked about how their biological clock wasn't going to be ticking for very long. And so I talked to them and said, well, I respect that. And I said, we're not trying to rush you, but at the same time, I want us to be a legitimate family. And there were women who said, well, look, if they said, you know what, no more if, they said, I will, you know, I'll work while you're in school. And they were trying to convince me, let's just have the babies now, you know, because I got good people in my life that can help me with the 9 months. And while you're in school, we can have our family. They can help support us. And they said, in the meantime, that we can have our family, because they're like, you know, I found the man of I found a man after my own heart, and you know, it's our fucking time. That's what they said. They said it's our goddamn time. It's a motherfucking time. So they never got pregnant by me because you already know I did the pull-out method. I kept it coming, pre-cum away from them. You already know that. I'll give you new details. I just felt that I didn't want to have children under such oppressive circumstances. I didn't want to have kids out of pain. I didn't want to have kids out of trauma. And they were upset. The women were upset. But eventually they understood. Because they even told me that they would say things in the heat of the moment and get upset in the heat of the moment. And they knew that it was part, you know, it had a lot to do with the unresolved traumas and unsolved. Distress of their past and I remember that and I thought about when it comes to what happened regarding the harems. Let me give you new details. Sometimes we all shared large beds. And with these large beds in particular, and we're in these large beds. And I was living with women, as y'all know. And we shared living spaces. And in these living spaces, with the large beds, we all shared the beds. The only man that slept in it with them was me. Everyone else was women. Sometimes it could be about 15 women in each of these beds. About sometimes up to 20. The highest was 20. The lowest was 15, from what I remember. They counted themselves. I didn't. I was never a counter when it came to women. Women were into counting when it came to me. So it would be, sometimes they would put beds together. Like, it would be connectable beds. So that's how you get 15. Or sometimes it was just a large mattress that they were somehow able to make extremely large. They had furniture stores somehow make the furniture bigger than normal. And it was about 15, 20 women in a bed. Which means that they would all take turns snuggling, cuddling with me. And we would all share a bed. Sometimes with the women, it could be two women at a time, a woman at a time, three women at a time, then four women, then 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, all at a time. And we all shared those beds, and that's how we slept. And I remember at the time when it came to the women and myself, we shared bathrooms together. Sometimes it was boarding houses, rooming houses, and sometimes it was women who were already friends with each other, sometimes women who were co-workers, and they all lived under one roof. That's, they got along well. And I remember when they brought me to their homes, the co-workers and their friends were so enamored with my niceness, my politeness, my gentlemanness, my kindness, my soft-spoken demeanor, that they said, you need to have him here as much as possible. He can't be at his dorm all the time. So there were times where I divide my time between my dorm and their residencies, which means that we would, so when it came to like women overall, when we would grieve with each other, I just remember we verbally expressed our gratitude for one another. And I remember that with women, I tried my best for us to spend more time not having sex more than having sex, meaning I tried my best as a chivalrous gentleman to spend more time talking about intellectual based discussions and discussions about, you know, emotional intelligence too, and just conversations that were more about, and were inner beauty based conversations. And to my pleasant surprise, I was successful on that. We spent more time having inner beauty based conversations than having sex, because I didn't want it to be all sex with them, and they didn't want it to be all sex with me. So I'm glad we were successful in that regard. And that's one of the reasons why we had sex, because they were used to guys making all about sex with them, and they were tired of male pigs treating them that way. When it came to talking to me, it was totally different. It was like, wow, the fact that you're not trying to have sex with me makes me want to have sex with you. The fact that you're able to hold a cognitive dialogue with me makes me want to have sex with you even more. And the fact that you don't usually try to make a move on me and you let me make the first move, that would make them have want to have sex with me even much more. So living with the women, they were all sanitary, very clean, very much, you know, they did all the household chores. I tried to do chores with them, they wouldn't let me. They're like, no, we spoil you, we do everything for you, we pamper you, you just relax. And that was it. So cooking, cleaning, paying the bills, amenities, they took care of all those things. They fed me nutritious home cooked meals more than we went out. We didn't do a whole lot of fast food runs because they were health conscious. We did that here and there, so we didn't do a lot of, you know, going to restaurants and going to eateries, going to like fast food joints and going to drive-thrus here and there, but they're more like, well, we want to make sure you eat right, and they would make sure I exercise, because we would sometimes jog or walk together as a collective, and sometimes we did gym times together, from what I remember, just hitting the gym, exercising, working out together. They were very health conscious, you know, be hygienic and, shave, wax, dental flossing, teeth brushing, mouth washing. They were big on everything health conscious wise. Make sure you get plenty of sleep. And what I remember about them was it was basically all about having that sense of, this is the last detail. It was basically about having that sense of socialization. I mean, we pretty much went wherever I wanted to go. Because wherever I wanted to go is wherever they wanted to go. So they would carpool, and we all went in cars and gone places together. It could be, this is a new detail, it could be, besides the joy rides, as you already know, the new detail is that visiting historical landmarks, it could be going bike riding. It could be it could be going to sporting events too. It could be going to concerts. It could be going to after parties, after hour spots. That's what we did. So that's the last set of details we did together. So let's focus on life after my sexual past. So, moving forward. How will sex be for me moving forward? Basically is what I'm saying. Well, it goes like this. So when it comes to sex, I can promise you all, and I can promise myself, I can promise my grandma Clara, I can promise even the Jesus that she gave to me as a gift, divine gift. And I can promise women that I will never again be the concubine side piece of a married person without that married person's, other married person's permission ever again. I will never commit adultery ever again. I will never be the side piece of an unmarried person who's in a serious relationship with their other unmarried person, and there's no permission between the two ever again. And I can say that I will never again have sex with sex workers in terms of illegally in environments where it's illegal ever again. I'll never again do anything sexual with police officers due to the abuse of power dynamics, which is a form of sexual abuse. That'll never happen ever again. I told that story in one of the episodes I did in the past. I will never again have sex out of complex trauma ever again. I will never have sex out of acute trauma ever again. I will never again have sex out of compound trauma. I will never again have sex out of complex trauma. I will never again have sex out of secondary trauma. And I'll never again have sex out of vicarious trauma. I will never again watch porn out of acute trauma. I will never again watch porn out of complex trauma. I will never again watch porn out of compound trauma. I will never again watch porn out of secondary trauma. I'll never again watch porn out of vicarious trauma. I will never again masturbate out of acute trauma, complex trauma, compound trauma, secondary trauma, vicarious trauma. Secondary trauma, vicarious trauma. I'll never again view, read, and listen to erotica out of acute trauma, complex trauma, compound trauma, secondary trauma, and vicarious trauma. No more. And that's what I can promise. I decided that when it comes to sex, the hypersexuality will never happen again. I can promise that The sensual recklessness, the erotic recklessness, the sexual recklessness will never happen again. I will never again womanize out of chronic stress nor psychological stress. I will never manize again out of chronic stress and psychological stress. I will never non-binary eyes again out of chronic stress nor psychological stress. I will never again view porn out of chronic stress nor psychological stress. I'll never have sex again out of chronic stress, psychological stress. I'll never masturbate again out of chronic stress and nor psychological stress. I'll never consume erotica again out of chronic stress, psychological stress. So I want to make this clear. I will never womanize again out of acute trauma, complex trauma, compound trauma, secondary trauma, and vicarious trauma. I'll never manize again out of acute trauma, compound trauma, complex trauma, secondary trauma, and vicarious trauma. I'll never non-binary eyes again out of acute trauma, complex trauma, compound trauma, secondary trauma, and vicarious trauma ever again. I'm saying the same thing in many different ways because there's more than one way to state truth. And this is how I genuinely feel in my psyche. These are the promises I'm making to us all, because I do recognize my erotic behavior, sexual behavior, and sensual behavior as a public figure is a role model for everybody else, and not just myself, because to deny being a role model as a public figure is disingenuous and a form of folly, because there are many people that are going to imitate everything you say, everything you do, there's going to be, as a public figure, every thought you think, other people will think them. Every action you do, every people will do them. Every word you say, other people will say them. Every feeling you feel, there'll be other people's emotions. So that's why I feel the way that I feel. And I can definitely guarantee that I will never again live with women out of acute trauma, complex trauma, compound trauma, secondary trauma, vicarious trauma, chronic stress, psychological stress, and rigid recklessness ever again. I'll never do sleepovers out of acute trauma, complex trauma, compound trauma, secondary trauma, vicarious trauma, chronic stress, psychological stress, and rigid recklessness ever again. I'll never again use the pull-out method to traumatically compensate for the fact that I didn't always have protected sex. What I can promise is that I will never again have totally unprotected sex. I can promise that I will never again have sex with those who are willing to tell any and everybody. That was my past, but no more. I will never again put myself in other people's situations or have other people put me in situations where I have to fear for my life because I'm with other people's so-and-sos. And what I can promise is that I won't have sex in houses, apartments, in private sex environments, public sex environments, where it is traumatically risky and traumatically risque. That will never, ever happen again. And what I can promise is that I will never again put myself in I'll never have other people put me in situations. I'll never put myself in situations where I have to rely on divine grace to protect me from sextortion, sexpionage, and honey traps, and women sex decoys, like what happened to me in the past. I was spared all those things from the past. But I do understand that that was divine grace and divine mercy keeping me from those things happening. So I decided I can never again duplicate any part of my past because those things can actually happen, especially on a bigger scale. Now that I'm a public figure, those kind of people will try to make me duplicate my sexual past so they can have me within erotic entrapment, sensual entrapment, sexual entrapment, also have me in erotic ensnarement, sexual ensnarement, sensual ensnarement. So I'm not going to push my blessings, as I would say to the faith community, as I would say to the secular community, I'm not going to push my luck. So what I want to say is those things will never, ever happen again. There will never be misogyny again infused in my eroticism, sensuality, and sexuality. There'll never be any misandry infused in my eroticism, sensuality, and sexuality. And there'll never be any queerphobia again infused in my eroticism, sensuality, and sexuality. So these are the promises I'm making to us all. I've turned over a new sexual leaf, a new erotic leaf, and a new sensual leaf. I will never, ever again have sex with a bunch of church women before church and after church like I did in the past. Because church is not the place to sexually collect people. I'm not even a fan of sexually collecting anyone. Even outside of church, that's just not how I think. So I do not apply that thinking to inside of church. Moving forward, now and forevermore, I will not do that to any house of worship. I will not even do that to any secular institution. So I am changing my behavior sexually, erotically, sensually, and you can guarantee that these promises will never be broken. These oaths will never be violated. These vows will never be obliterated. I'm not the modern Judas. I'm not a traitor. I'm not a betrayer. I'm not a seditionist. I'm not an insurrectionist. I'm not even a treasonist. These are all my promises to us all. And I'm including my grandma Claire in particular because I want her to know, even though she's no longer physically with us, that I now sexually know better. That's why I now sexually do better. I forevermore sexually know better, so I forevermore sexually do better. I now forevermore know sexually better. That's why I now forevermore sexually do better. So this is my promises to y'all, and there's more promises I'm going to be making. I can keep all these promises so I can keep listing them. I will never again have sex with single mothers out of trauma complexes. I will never again have sex with wives out of trauma complexes. I'll never again have sex with girlfriends out of trauma complexes. I will never again have sex with abuse survivors out of trauma complexes. I'll never again have sex with I'll never again have sex with fiancés out of trauma complexes. I'm the type of person now forevermore that if you are in a serious relationship with somebody, that could be marriage, that could be engaged to be married, it could just be boyfriend and girlfriend. If I do not have the other life partner's permission, whether that's spouse or soon to be spouse, or y'all are just in a romantic relationship that's serious and committed, but y'all aren't married, I don't have the other person's permission, I leave all, both of y'all alone, period. ! That's just how I roll. And, you know, I can say this, I will never again have sex that has zero birth control methods being utilized. And as for porn, I would never put myself, anybody else, or have other people put me and others in sexually dangerous, erotically dangerous, sensually dangerous scenarios. And I'll say this, I will never do business with any porn company, any erotica company that has a lengthy history of the violation of sexual rights, the violation of sexual pleasure, the violation of sex workers' rights, the violation of human rights, the violation of equal rights, the violation of civil and political rights, and the violations of economic, social, and cultural rights. I will never do business with any porn company, erotica company that doesn't fight back against the needless, unlawful unethical and professional piracy that happens to them. I will never do any business with any porn company, erotica company, that has a history of misogyny, misandry, queerphobia, racism, and all forms of discrimination. That I can promise. And I also say this, I now and forevermore promise to be wise with porn literacy, erotica literacy, and sex literacy. I now forevermore promise to live a life of erotic wisdom, erotic clarity, erotic discernment, sensual wisdom, sensual clarity, and sensual discernment. And being sexually wise, being sexually discerning, and being of sexual crystal clarity. I will never again masturbate to the type of mainstream porn, mainstream erotica that has not been proven to be ethical porn, ethical erotica. After the abuse, I've never viewed child pornography, never have, never will. I want to say that on record. After the abuse was over, I never viewed any illegal pornography, never have, never will. After the abuse, I've never viewed child erotica, never have, never will. I've never viewed any illegal erotica, never have, never will, after the abuse. Because when I was being abused as a child, I was shown all these things. But even after the abuse, I've never seen such things. And I never will see such things. What I am saying is that when it comes to typical mainstream porn, typical mainstream erotica, that's what I mean. If it has not been proven to be ethical mainstream porn or ethical mainstream erotica, I will never view it again. I'll never masturbate to it again. I'll never read it again. I'll never listen to it again. So, thank you all for allowing me to hold myself accountable in your presence. And to all the right people out there who want to help hold me accountable, and I can help hold you accountable if you are similar to me, I welcome you all as well. I will never again socialize with women out of bereavement. I will never again do social outings with women out of deep distress. And and I never again will be in any situations with anyone and when it comes to any environment out of duress and no longer because I'm depressed.